Sears is one of Illinois' most iconic brands, but what's going on with one of our oldest companies? Business Insider joins us with an in-depth look at the retailer. In other business news, we'll also hear about the latest controversy involving a pork industry expansion, this time with residents in one part of Western Illinois.
We have experienced hog confinements already, so this new confinement, called Runway Ridge, is just an additional problem.
That's Bernadette Township resident Stuart Harrison. We'll talk with him, along with the Chicago Tribune reporter who's been investigating the situation. Plus, how beauty salon professionals are helping break the stigma of silence around domestic violence and sexual assault. It's all because of a new law.
The training will provide statistics so that they understand the incidence of domestic violence and sexual assault. Then it'll talk about the different forms of domestic violence, not just physical abuse. There's financial abuse. There's emotional or psychological abuse.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. I hope everyone enjoyed their weekend. After 18 months without a budget, there was talk in the past couple of days and today that at least one part of the State House, Illinois senators, may be quietly working on a budget deal. The Associated Press and others are reporting that Senate leaders say a vote could come as early as today. Senate discussions would include term-limiting legislative leaders, changing how injured workers are compensated, reducing pension benefits for government employees, much of what Governor Rauner has been pushing in what he's been calling his turnaround agenda. There's also talk of higher income taxes. Of course, passing a budget would still require the approval of House Speaker Michael Madigan and Governor Rauner. Here's what the governor said this morning in Springfield after a breakfast honoring law enforcement officials. It was when a reporter asked if he feels like he's been cut out of this process.
Governor, you talked earlier about how you're not involved directly in these current budget negotiations. What does that say that you and Mike Madigan have, by all intents and purposes, been cut out of this process?
Well, I don't know if I'd say cut out is the right word, but I've encouraged Democratic legislators and Republican legislators to negotiate with each other and work together. And I don't need to be in the middle of everything.
Are you and Mike Madigan the problem? Is it that you guys can't get along and you still present a hurdle, right? It has to get approval from you and the Speaker.
Well, this takes, to get something done that's good for the people of Illinois for the future, it takes bipartisan compromise.
A few minutes later, Governor Rauner expanded on what he expects to see happen in the next few days.
My hope is that we come up with some bipartisan, productive compromise to change the system because it's broken. Let's fundamentally change, and let's get truly balanced budgets for the long-term stability of the state, and let's grow our economy. That's what I'm hoping we can get done.
A reminder, there's just two workdays remaining for the current so-called lame duck General Assembly. No time to seek a House vote, but we'll keep you updated on budget stories as developments unfold. And we'll check in again on that tomorrow, as well as in other political news, bring you a preview of President Obama's farewell address in Chicago tomorrow evening. You're listening to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Sears has been a Chicago company since 1887. It's one of Illinois' most recognized brands, and not just because everyone still calls that building the Sears Tower. But like that name, the company has certainly been in decline. Last week, the retail giant sold off its heavyweight tool brand Craftsman to Stanley Black & Decker for about $900 million. It also said it would be closing about 150 more of its Sears and Kmart stores earlier this year. There's talk of bankruptcy. Many are asking what CEO Eddie Lampert has done with and for the company. We're joined now by Business Insider reporter Haley Peterson, who's been covering Sears for a while. She just had an in-depth story out on Lampert yesterday. We'll tweet out the link so everyone can see that. Sears, of course, based in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, just northwest of Chicago. Haley's on the line with us from Virginia. Hey, Haley, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Haley, you've covered Sears for years now. I wonder if you can give us a sense of what kind of shape you think the company's in right now.
So I think a lot of analysts are wondering right now what the strategy is at Sears to stay in operation. There's a lot of people that think it could go bankrupt within 2 years. There's many that think that that could happen as soon as this year. The company's been raising a lot of money, as we've seen actually within the last week. The CEO has promised financing of up to $1 billion to the company to help it stay in operation. Shortly after we heard that it needed about $1.6 billion to stay in operation through the end of this year. So they were definitely, you know, trying to stay afloat, and were all just, you know, watching to see how long they can stay in operation and if they can turn this ship around.
Haley, how much of this is because of the environment of the retail industry, of older stores like Sears, and how much they've had to deal with online competitors, with Amazon and other folks? How much of Sears' struggles right now are because of just general struggles that everyone else in the industry is facing?
So I spoke to a lot of retail experts as well as executives at the company, at Sears. And of course, you know, traditional big box retailers have been hit really hard by the rise of online shopping and falling foot traffic in shopping malls. And that's, of course, something that cannot be ignored here. All retailers are trying to, all older retailers are trying to change their business models to meet these new customer needs and shopping habits. But what I heard repeatedly in talking to experts and executives on this is that this isn't just the fault of a challenging environment. This is also the fault of a failed strategy at Sears, which, as many people have squarely put the blame on the CEO, Eddie Lampert.
What kind of culture do you think he's created within Sears? I know he spends a lot of time talking about Sears. You know, we've heard all of these things over the past couple of years about focusing on technology and how to make that experience part of the Sears experience. You know, he talks about Sears being like Uber or Amazon. But what kind of culture do you think Eddie Lampert has created within Sears?
So we heard from current and former executives that Eddie Lampert is out of touch with reality. He wants Sears to appeal to younger shoppers, and he wants tech to be a big part of, and you know, he wants to grow e-commerce. He wants tech to be a big part of the company. But his strategy, his execution, it just hasn't played out in the company's favor. And I think part of that is because Sears shoppers are mostly an older demographic, and many of them are still shopping in or want to shop in Sears physical stores. However, investments in the physical stores has been cut with Eddie Lampert in charge, and that's been a problem. Many shoppers tell me that they don't go to Sears anymore because the stores are languishing. Physically, they're in bad shape. The ceilings are leaking. The escalators are broken. The floors are cracked. And
there's a part of your story, right, where you talk about how there are even stores where people are hanging up sheets to kind of conceal parts of the store where they don't have merchandise, or it's kind of a mess.
Yes. Sears has been shutting down parts of their stores to try and hide unused store space. And in some cases, that's been because they've shut down the grocery department and they have no other merchandise to fill that space. So they're putting up sheets now. In other stores, they are actually shutting down entire floors and renting that space out to other retailers for higher rents.
Now, there are a lot of people who spoke to you, and I do want to ask you after you answer this question about what Sears said when you asked them for a comment, but there were a lot of people who spoke to you on the condition of anonymity who kind of described, and you lay this out in your story, the culture that the CEO, Eddie Lampert, has created where he's not there, he's in Florida, he has these teleconferences where he's sort of on a screen, and it doesn't sound like a great environment in terms of how these meetings are going.
Yes, we heard. I heard from a lot of people who told me that morale is very low there, and that people are really afraid to challenge the CEO in these video conferences. And that, you know, we heard from people that he just doesn't want to hear viewpoints that challenge his own, and so that makes it hard for people who really want to fix the company to come in and offer new ideas. And, you know, like you mentioned, another part of the problem is that he doesn't physically work at the headquarters for most of the year, which, as you mentioned earlier, too, is in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. And he doesn't visit very often, for that matter, either. We've heard from multiple people that he's only there once a year for the shareholders meeting. And for a lot of people, for a company that's in distress, they want their leader to be there physically. I talked to someone who worked for a very large chain prior to Sears and said, very large retail chain prior to Sears, and said that their CEO was, you know, eating lunch in the cafeteria with the other employees and just around, always had an open door policy. And that person said that kind of CEO would be the type of person that would be needed for a company that is trying to execute such a massive turnaround like Sears is.
And as this is happening, Haley, how many executives have left Sears in the past 2 years?
According to my count, which is based on LinkedIn data, that's about 67 executives at the vice president level and higher.
Wow. Okay. And I wonder, I mean, what do you think, I mean, what do you think's next? Like, what do you expect to see coming out? You mentioned in the beginning the possibility of filing for bankruptcy. I feel like that's been, in my former life as a business reporter, I feel like everyone for the past 5 to 10 years has been saying Sears is going to file for bankruptcy. So, I mean, what do you see? What are you watching for in the next couple of months to see if that's going to happen?
You know, it's really hard to say. It's all speculation. But I do think that it's highly possible that Sears will announce more store closures and that we will see more brands being sold off or licensed. As you mentioned, Craftsman was sold off last week. An agreement has been reached to sell it to Stanley Black & Decker. And I think that, you know, Die Hard and Kenmore are two other brands that could be sold off. Also, the home services business, we could see that be sold off to raise funds to stay in operation. It's really hard to say when and if this company is going to declare bankruptcy because Eddie Lampert has shown many times in the past he has a lot of levers to pull to keep the company in operation. So we're all kind of on watch for that.
That's Business Insider's Haley Peterson. We will tweet out a link to her story. Lots of in-depth reporting about Eddie Lampert, his management style, and Sears. Haley, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is the 21st. In Western Illinois, the plan for a new 20,000 hog confinement facility has been at the center of an ongoing controversy. Some residents of Fulton County, that's about 40 miles southwest of Peoria, oppose the construction. They cite environmental risks, among other concerns. Last year, that group sent a letter to the Illinois Department of Agriculture to officials asking them to put a halt to the project. Last month, Fulton County commissioners passed a resolution, largely symbolic, but urging the state to halt action on large confinements in the county until there's, quote, meaningful reform. For the time being, the company has decided to put the construction of the facility on hold. But what does the future hold for both concerned residents and the company, Professional Swine Management? In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by a reporter from the Chicago Tribune who's been following this issue. But we wanted to start with Fulton County resident Stuart Harrison. He lives in Bernadette Township near the proposed construction site. Hi, Stuart. Thank you for joining us on the 21st.
Thank you.
Stuart, can you tell me a little bit about you have been involved in trying to stop this? First, for people who don't know, what is a hog confinement project? What is that?
Well, a hog confinement project they're called CAFOs, C-A-F-O, concentrated animal feeding operations. And basically what they do is put in over through a one-year period 20,000 hogs, 20-plus thousand hogs into that confinement, and then they take the untreated sewage and then spread that sewage onto lands nearby or within the area. And of course, we're talking about neighbors who live in those areas. There are about 20 plus family farm homesteads within 2 miles of the proposed Runway Ridge hog project. A couple families are right across the street, are diagonally, and we all the neighbors stand opposed to these hog factories. We have issues with the water, the air, the soil, the health, and of course the economics. If anybody that lives near hog confinement, no one wants to purchase the property.
Right.
And that becomes a very sad story, a disastrous situation for neighbors.
Now, you're less than half a mile from where this proposed construction site is. I know that you actually had a similar experience with a hog confinement not so far away in Ipava, Illinois. What happened there? What's been your experience being near a facility like this?
What has happened there is there are two confinements to the west of the village of Ipava. Both of them, when they spread the manure, the untreated sewage, onto the ground to the west, when the winds pick up northwest, west, southwest, the stench is foul and toxic. You can hardly stay outdoors, and neighbors can't even hang their clothes out because the clothes that you put on the line smell, and you have to be rewashed. It really affects the quiet enjoyment of family homesteads, and we're not real happy with those two sites. One of them has already had a case filed with the Pollution Control Board, and Professional Swine Management, it's my understanding, has agreed to pay a fine on 8 different locations, and one of them here to the southwest of Ipava. And because the leaching of the sewage and stuff into the streams and to the land and so forth, more rains, where is this going to go, you know? So they've agreed to pay a fine there. I think all 8 sites, the fine was $116,000. So it hasn't been finalized yet, but that's what's on the docket right now.
Stuart, I mentioned that the county commissioners had passed a resolution last month asking that this construction, these projects be halted. Is that sufficient for you? What else would you like to see happen?
Well, the resolution, that was a courageous moment when the commissioners or the board members passed that resolution. That was a step in the right direction. The Bernadotte Township Board had done that about 2 months prior. And basically the resolution calls for a halt to this runway ridge and their project here in Bernadotte Township, but also calls for a halt to any new CAFLs, any new hog confinements, hog factories in Fulton County.
Stuart, I'm going to stop you there for a second because we've got to take a break. But when we come back, I'm going to have you finish that thought. We're speaking with local resident Stuart Harrison in Fulton County about this proposed hog confinement project in Western Illinois. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Karen Hudson with the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project. And from the Chicago Tribune, Gary Marks is going to be joining us. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about the proposed One Runway Ridge Farm project. It's a proposal for a 20,000 hog confinement facility in Fulton County, about 40 miles southwest of Peoria. Residents there have opposed it. The plan's on hold right now. We're talking to resident Stuart Harrison about the project. Stuart, I just wanted you to finish your thought, because right now it looks like you've got you have your town officials who have passed at least resolutions saying that they would like to have better controls on these facilities before construction moves forward. You were saying you thought they were very courageous for taking that stand. I should say we reached out to Professional Swine Management and to the Illinois Pork Producers Association to join us. Both of them declined. I'm going to read a statement from Professional Swine Management in a minute, but I do want to say Illinois Pork Producers Association sent a statement that said pig farming was an important, longstanding part of the agricultural economy in Fulton County, and went on to talk a little bit about those economic contributions that they feel like pig farming makes to Fulton County. We will put the full statement on our website. But Stuart, what would you like to see happen now?
Well, let me comment on the pork producers' comment.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They're talking about economics in somebody's pocketbook. What about the pocketbook of the family farmer who they are setting these next to and near family homesteads? That's not appropriate. That's not acceptable. So what we agree, economics and things are important, and the hog business is an important part of society everywhere, all across the world. But the problem is the laws that are on the books favor and benefit the hog confinement. And the local guy, the county board, have little say unless you protest like as has been done. So we're contending that legislators need to call leaders throughout the state to find some solutions. Let's work together to solve the problem. The way it's going now, it's just harmful, and we just feel that there should be an amendment to the laws and not necessarily favoring one party over the other. Well, let's get this worked out before we have a disastrous water situation. Like Iowa has 9,000 hog confinements, and they have water issues up north of Des Moines. The water is being tainted. And where this location, Runway Farms, is, and the one that they're hopping over to what is called Memory Lane Acreage, which is about 4 or 5 miles from here, from that location. What's happening is the hog confinement business is just jumping around to make sure that they've taken care of their profits. And that's just not the American way. So that's what we're calling for, is to let's get this worked out and see where they come from.
Stuart, thanks for joining us. Stuart Harrison is a resident with Fulton County. He's been explaining his opposition to this project. We appreciate you taking the time, Stuart. Thank you.
Bye.
I should mention we reached out, as I said, to Professional Swine Management. They did decline to join us. They sent a statement saying that they were, quote, proud of the employment opportunities and tax base that the Fulton County farms provide to residents of the county. They said they were proud of, quote, also their track record of working closely with state and local officials to ensure that, quote, our farms meet or exceed all requirements. I want to bring another person into this conversation. Gary Marks is a reporter for the Chicago Tribune. The Tribune's been doing some pretty extensive coverage of issues related to the pork industry in Illinois. He's with us now from Tribune Tower. Karen Hudson also is on the line with us. She's the founder of Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water. She's on the phone from Mapleton. Gary, Karen, thank you for being with me as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary, can I start with you? Just as you were hearing that statement from Professional Swine Management, you heard Stewart's comments about water. I wanted to just ask you, broadly speaking, how much has the industry and Professional Swine Management worked with residents who were expressing concern about existing facilities?
You know, I think generally speaking, there hasn't been a whole lot of cooperation, consultation between Professional Swine and the other major hog producers and local residents. I think that has been a real problem. And as I think Stewart said, the laws right now really favor the growth of these massive operations. You know, the guidelines that exist currently are very, very limited in scope. And essentially, if the proposed hog confinement pork producers fulfill 8 or 9 sort of small kind of things in terms of guidelines, setbacks to local residents, et cetera, the hog confinement's going to go through. And so I think that really is, I think everybody's sort of talking about the balance of power here. Currently, the ways the laws are written, they really favor the growth and expansion of these massive facilities and really leave the little guy out. It really leaves the small local farmer out in terms of trying to prevent one of these things from going through.
And we just heard from Stewart, Gary. I wonder, you've spent some time in this area. How many residents oppose this? How many of these small farmers are opposing this production? We heard Stewart say there was about 20 families.
Yes. And this is, I mean, again, these are they put these in very rural areas. And I think in Fulton County, especially, you know, Professional Swine and others have put up numerous of these massive hog farms in the same area. So we're talking about a concentration of these facilities and people who have not been to them. I mean, they really are something to be seen. They are the length.
Wait, can
you some
describe
of these sheds,
it? What is
yeah,
it like?
I mean, some of these sheds are the length of 1 or 2 football fields with a 10-foot pit below it that really captures manure from 20,000 pigs. I mean, the pits are 10 feet deep. Each one of these facilities can produce 1 million gallons of manure waste a year. And they are massive. They are factory operations. And, you know, the pork producers, I guess, declined to come on. You know, on their behalf, I want to say that many of these pork producers are responsible. They are doing their best to prevent spills. But for the most part, these facilities, once they're put in, they sort of operate at, you know, with very, very minimum guidelines. And the state, you know, Pollution Control Board tries to do their best to regulate them. The Environmental Protection Agency tries their best. But really, they're understaffed. And once these facilities go in, it's very, very hard to control them. And the result has been that there's been numerous spills.
And when you say spill, you mean manure.
Yeah. Well, here's what I'm saying. Yes, I mean, there is this sort of, they talk about this cycle, this virtuous cycle where the hogs are raised and they produce this manure, and these millions of gallons of manure is then put on crop fields, corn and soy, and it helps produce more crops. And that is the ideal way it's done. And in many cases, it is done that way. But, you know, our investigation showed that that these spills occur all the time. A lagoon, an outdoor lagoon that holds these the swine manure can overflow. The berms can break. If somebody puts manure on frozen ground and then it thaws, that manure then runs off into rivers and creeks and streams. So this has happened repeatedly over and over again. And our series showed that, in fact, these hog confinement operations are the number one source of fish kills in the state.
And I know in your past reporting, last summer we spoke with your colleague David Jackson about some of these broader issues. We'll tweet out that link for everyone for that in conversation. But I know that state officials have accused professional swine of environmental violations at 10 of the confinements that they manage. That's in southwest Illinois. I know the state attorney general has sued them. This situation in Fulton County, has this also caught the attention of Attorney General Lisa Madigan?
I mean, she has talked just in general terms about the need for the first time to really focus on the concerns of local residents. I mean, she gave us a statement before the last part of our series ran, you know, about Spoon River. And so I think that is a step forward. I think, as Stu mentioned, Fulton County's really, really courageous decision to step up and say, listen, we don't want Runway Ridge, and we think the state legislature should take steps to look at this issue in a more broader way. I think that was really important. Again, you need to understand that in many of these communities, the Farm Bureau and farmers are incredibly powerful. So to take any step in the direction of saying, wait, let's wait a second, let's review the situation that we've got right now before we continue to establish more of these massive confinements, I think, you know, that is a step in the right direction.
I should point out, again, going back to the Illinois pork producers who did send us an extensive statement, they did talk about the economic impact, saying that they pointed to one economic study in particular, saying that livestock contributes more than $84 million to the Fulton County economy. And they also said, and this is what I wanted to ask you about, Gary, they said that according to the recent Illinois EPA annual inspection report, less than 1% of Illinois' hog farms have had odor complaints or water pollution violations. Is that accurate to your reporting?
I can't speak to that specifically. As I said, and the pork producers aren't here to defend themselves, there are many responsible hog confinement operators. But as our reporting also showed, there have been dozens of spills, manure spills. There have been, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of fish killed in related hog confinement related incidences. So, you know, you can talk about the confinement operations who are responsible, and there are many of them. But I think the issue is those who are not responsible. And the question also becomes, you know, what is the power of local residents? Right now, local residents really have no power to stop these things in their communities. They have no authority. All the authority rests with the state, and even that authority is minimal. The State Department of Agriculture can't deny one of these facilities. They can ask for more information about these facilities, but as long as these facilities, you know, meet these 8 minimum criterion, they're going through. So that's really the question. Do local residents have any power here to stop this if they want to? Again, that's not a decision for me to make as a reporter, but that is a question that the residents of the state of Illinois and the legislators need to answer.
And I want to bring another one of those local residents in. And just a reminder again, to Gary's point, we did Professional Swine Management and the Illinois Pork Producers Association did decline to join us. They know we're having this conversation. They sent us those statements. I wanted to bring Karen into the conversation. Karen, you work with the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project that works with communities around the U.S. and Illinois to protect themselves from what you all describe as the negative impacts of factory farms. Can I ask, I know you're having a press conference in Springfield in a couple of weeks to do what Gary's talking about, to sort of try to empower residents. What do you want to see happen here? What would you like to see, as Gary, if you're hearing us talk about just the voice of local residents and also what you'd like to see state and local officials do?
Right. Thank you for having me. We are moving forward in January, And the point is that local residents, not just from Fulton County, but from across the state, will be talking about their personal experiences. And these also include farmers. In fact, a recent farmer in Fulton County, this facility is going in on two sides of their property, and they raise their own animals. So this isn't just residents. It's actual farmers who can't pick up and move their own livelihood when a large-scale 20,000-head facility comes in that creates the same amount of waste as a city. So we're moving forward to basically follow up on what the Tribune has exposed. And
what would you like to see? Yeah, what would you like to see lawmakers do at the state level? Let's start at the state level. What kind of?
Yeah, we want to do quite a bit. I'm going to go back to a statement you just made about they said that less than 1% were turning in odor violations. That's one of the things that we want changed. We'd like these operations to all register with the IEPA, and we have found through our own research that the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency only has accounting for a certain amount of these factory farms all over the state, and we have done our own investigations through mapping, and we have found there's only about a 48% to 50% accuracy rate of where all these facilities are in the state. Our IEPA doesn't even know where they're at, and that should be one of the first things that gets changed is every single facility, no matter what size, in the state of Illinois should be registering with the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, and we addressed that at the federal level, and IEPA got a failing grade for following up on the Clean Water Act, and one of these is that they need to have an accurate accounting of all these facilities in the state of Illinois. They are applying for more and more facilities, and we see this backlog where IEPA doesn't even have an accounting. There are different counties where we've looked where, I'm just giving you a rough example, where we have found 20 facilities when the IEPA only has a record of 11 or 12. And so, we've gone through at least 30 counties.
So that sounds like one important, right? So do you feel like you need to have a record of an accurate accounting of the facilities that exist? What else would you like to see?
It's a no-brainer that we need to have an accurate accounting.
And
we
what
need
else?
To close and go ahead.
What else would you like to see?
It's called the expansion loophole. It's so big you could drive a truck through it. Is that once a facility is in and in place, it can expand up to 50% of its fixed capital cost every 2 years. So once a facility is in, it can expand without having a public hearing or a meaningful public input. So once it's there forever.
Well,
so,
last question for you, Karen. Yeah, we just have about a minute or two left. What do you want people throughout Illinois to know about this? I know this is something you've personally been fighting factory farms for more than two decades.
We have no local control. When a garbage dump or low-level nuclear waste comes into any county in the state, a local county board can examine all of the impacts and make a binding decision. As far as a large-scale livestock facility of, say, 10,000 hogs that will produce the same amount of raw sewage as 50,000 people, they can make a recommendation, but it's not binding. That is one of the biggest things that people need to know about, and also the setbacks that they have from these facilities to individual residences and populated areas are so minimal that they are not doing anything to protect the public health, the quality of life, the property values. All of these other externalities are not being protected. My area is public health that I am most concerned about, and the emissions aren't just a smell. These emissions consist of everything from the bacteria that come from these facilities, including methicillin-resistant staph. And new research has found that people who live nearer to hog confinements are more colonized with MRSA. And that is something.
Lots of different issues there. Well, thanks so much for joining us. That's Karen Hudson with Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water. I want to thank Gary Marks as well, a reporter with the Chicago Tribune's investigative unit. We'll tweet out all of the links to the reporting he's done as well. Gary, Karen, thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nyla.
You You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Starting this year, salon professionals renewing their two-year licenses in Illinois will be required to take a domestic violence and sexual assault awareness training. It's a new law that will require roughly 88,000 salon professionals in Illinois to take a one-hour course. The law doesn't require intervention, but provides access to resources like support groups and hotline numbers they can offer to clients. Joining us on the line to talk more about this from Chicago is Christy Paskven. She's founder of Chicago Says No More. It's a coalition of agencies that advocate against domestic violence and sexual assault. Also on the line is Joan H. Rowan. She owns two salons, one on the south side of Chicago and another one in Oaklawn. Christy, Joan, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for being with me.
Thank you for having us.
Joan, can I start with you? The law that requires, this is a new law and that requires this training, but the concept isn't new for you. It's actually something you've been trying to do in your salon for almost two decades. Why was it important for you to implement this training in your salons?
Well, actually, our industry decades ago started talking about this. And then I had a relationship through the salon with a woman who actually was taking care of women and children with a safe house. And she, you know, we were talking one time and she said, you know, they're coming into your salons. You know these people. And she has a background in psychology, and she's done wonderful things in our area for victims of domestic violence. So she came to my salon and talked to my staff. So the first time was about 20 years ago when I was watching my staff listen. And almost, I have the training almost for my staff more than my clients. You know, it's information that people don't talk about. So it's an easy thing to educate your young staff with. And in salons, most of your staff is right out of high school. They're, you know, trained in a trade. But they're usually young, and it's great information. To be able to notice people in trouble.
Christy, for you all, Chicago Says No More launched a couple years ago in April 2015. Why was getting this law and having this training and targeting particularly salon professionals, beauty, health professionals, why was that a priority for you all?
Yeah, so Joan just talked about the fact that a lot of people don't know about the incidence of domestic violence and sexual assault. One in three women, one in seven men experience some sort of violence by their partners in their lifetimes. And so when you think about that, you and I, we all know people that have experienced this. And so a lot of the training has to do with, it's not just physical abuse. Domestic violence and domestic abuse has to do with financial abuse, psychological abuse, verbal abuse. And so this group of professionals, which is 88,000 strong, is a perfect area for people to be able to be given a little training. And then if a client self-selects and asks about it and knows about this law or is just having a conversation with them, they can help them with resources if they want to help them connect, as well as they can possibly have, you know, conversations with family and friends. And I just think the tens of thousands of conversations that can happen because of this is great.
And you said self-selects. Can we talk about that for a minute? Why is it important, you think, for the survivor, the person who's dealing with this, to bring it up themselves as opposed to say, because it seems like the training makes it very clear that it's not, it's really if someone's looking for help, how to provide that help.
Yeah. Back when I was in college, I was on a rape hotline at one point, and I remember there was a woman who came forth one night and said she'd been beaten by her husband, and I actually went to the hospital with her. And I was just naive enough to think that I could convince her to leave her husband. The fact of the matter is it takes something like 30 different incidents of abuse for someone to decide they want to leave, and that's for a variety of reasons. It can be financial, again. It can be because there's children or animals involved in the relationship. And so it's got to be something that someone wants to do in terms of looking for resources and looking for help. And so a lot of the training is just listening and supporting and connecting people. And so we're not looking for people to intervene or tell someone what they should do. We're just looking for them to be able to provide information if someone asks for it.
Joan, have you, in the past 2 decades, have you had an opportunity to provide help for people? Has anyone ever come to you or on your staff? Have you all had a chance to offer this help to someone?
Absolutely. And what we've done, all my salons, there's always a poster about getting help. And we always have palm cards or tear-off sheets in the bathroom where, you know, you don't have to put up with violence. Call this number. If you need help, call this number. We found that the palm cards work better because people, well, I know because they're gone a lot. I have to keep filling up the palm cards.
Oh,
and
wow.
We have a sheet on the wall that says, you know, call this number with the tags. I don't think people take them off as often, although they do, and I've had to replace them. But I think they're afraid that someone might know that they went into the bathroom and tore it off. This is a crime of silence. And people who are, you know, in a domestic violent relationship of any sort, even if it's, I'll tell you how much you can spend on your hair, it's a crime of silence. People are afraid that you know. You know, there have been times when I have had people share with me details. And you have to be real careful because often if they share too much, you never see them again because they're embarrassed or afraid to come back or think that you might have a judgment or might have something to say about it. So with the training that I've gotten from people like Get a New Direction, it's an agency that they can call, they talk to counselors. We're not counselors, you know. We're just regular people who say, boy, you don't really have to put up with that. In the bathroom, there's a card you might want to look at, period. And in the training, they tell you not to bring it up again. You know, we're not to call the police. We are not to try and counsel anyone. We need to listen and connect with these great agencies like AND, and there's a number of them. Even our Archdiocese in Chicago right now is a huge initiative against domestic violence. You know, so there are places to go, and they will come in, and Chicago Says No More is going to come in and give this training that I've never really had to pay for, because you'll find out that people who want to take or help people in domestic violence, that no one's charging you for the training. They're glad to come in and help.
And how will that work now, Christy? Will they have to pay for training now?
No, they won't have to pay for training. So we're going to raise the funds to the training for this program. And the original training for this will start at the America's Beauty Show, which is in March. And people can sign up on the America's Beauty Show website for the training now. They actually have some sessions that are out there, but they will not have to they will not have to pay for the training. And in the future, again, groups like A New Direction, where they've had a lot of training on domestic violence and sexual assault, will be able to come into salons and provide training for them.
And Christy, Joan mentioned listening and connecting. That's actually the name of the curriculum that you all have designed. It's called Listen, Support, Connect. Can you tell us a little bit more about it? I think Joan outlined some of the things that it sounds like she's gone through and very familiar with. What other things will you be training salon professionals on?
Yeah, so some of it, again, has to do with the awareness part. You know, here's how often the incidence of domestic violence and sexual assault happens. So we'll give them some statistics. They'll talk a little bit about the some examples, some not exactly case studies, but for example, I heard of an example at a training that I went to last year where in terms of financial abuse, some woman would have to go out, and her husband was looking at all of her receipts. She would go out and buy the largest box of laundry detergent she could find, and then he would look at the receipt. She would then return it and get the smallest box just to have a little bit of spending money. So it'll talk a little bit about not just identifying it, but some of the different types of abuse that occur, what your clients might say to you, you know, the kinds of things that you can say back to them to support them. Again, things that Joan just said, you know, you're not to call the police. You know, it's got to be a self-selection process, and it's got to be a process that people go through and then decide on their own to ask for help, and you can help connect them with those resources. So it's an hour long.
it may seem, and look, you can only do so much in an hour, but it'll give you enough information to be able to make those connections. And if people want more resources, they can always go to a variety of websites that are available.
And an hour is go ahead, perfect John. When you're in front of a staff of people, because it's enough time. The conversation will continue. The beauty of Chicago Says No More in this training and this new legislation is that the conversation will begin, and it will not end. People will take care of people. They will.
Question for you, Christy. What about folks who aren't able to attend the training in March? Are there what other resources are available for them?
So there will be other training that will be available that they can organize through their salons where someone will come in and train them. Throughout Illinois, for example, the Illinois Coalition Against Domestic Violence, they'll have the ability to connect people to salon training in the lower half of the state. And so there'll be just a variety of, and at some point we'll put some website training out there, but we don't have that yet.
Mm-hmm. And Christy, how much of this is also about stereotypes, right? I think people have a lot of stereotypes about domestic violence or sexual assault. How much of it is about understanding that this is something that occurs across socioeconomic levels, across all different backgrounds?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. When I first started this and I started having lunch with some people to talk about it, there were a number of people that are attorneys, that are MBAs, that are CPAs, that would say to me at lunch, hey, you know, I don't really tell people this, but I was in an abusive relationship. It is across all socioeconomic strata. It is everywhere. And so that one in three isn't just in some neighborhood. It's everywhere across. And so I think that's important for people to know, because as they're listening, they'll hear that.
Joan, what would you... Yeah, go ahead, Joan.
If you sat at a table with six women and just talked about today's interview, two out of those six people at least are going to tell you about a violent father, a violent husband, a violent mother, a violent boyfriend. This is not unusual behavior. The conversation has to be started so that we can all say it's not acceptable behavior. It's not unusual. We need to talk about it so that we educate from our homes and our beauty shops that it's unacceptable behavior.
Joan, Joan, what would you say, though, to professionals, maybe to salon professionals who think this isn't any of their business or this is sort of a personal thing? It's not what they signed up to do when they wanted to work in cosmetology.
Well, as cosmetologists, we touch people every day. We're with people every day. Our job is not just to make people look good. It's to make people feel good. We are in a wonderful, beautiful industry that most cosmetologist professionals know about the problem and will be thankful for the help and the training. You know, we're an industry that educates ourselves, and we take pride in that. And there's very few people in our industry who are not going to think this is a great idea.
Christy,
really, I'm
yeah.
sure of that. I've been a hairdresser for 42 years. I know my industry is embracing this.
Christy, that said, are there other professions you're also hoping to reach out to provide this kind of training? What's next for Chicago Says No More?
I think we'd like to explore that a little more. You know, the reason this works is because I'm with my hairstylist every 6 weeks for an hour at least at a time, and then sometimes I'm with her for 3 hours at a time. And as you and I spoke earlier, I've been with the same person for 15 years. So this works really well because of that intimate relationship that we have. We're going to, like, test out some other relationships where there might be licensing. I know that, for example, hospital professionals are already licensed, and there are some training that's already done for emergency room personnel. So we're going to just kind of look across different professions and see where it might make some sense. But you've got to have that trusting relationship that we already have here in the salon professional industry, and I don't know if that is going to cross as well against some other ones.
I would like to remind everyone listening to this conversation, if you need help, there are hotlines available for you if you are dealing with sexual assault or domestic violence. The domestic violence hotline number is 877-863-6338. For sexual assault, that hotline number is 1-800-293-2080. We're also going to be tweeting out links with community resources available to counties throughout central Illinois. I want to thank Christy Paskvan, who's founder of Chicago Says No More. Joan H. Rowan is a salon owner in the Chicagoland area. Her salons are called Everything's Relative. Joan, Christy, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you.
That does it for us today. I'm afraid we are out of time. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always, as I said, head to our website for more resources, 21stshow.org. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening.